A child has disappeared. The hunt is on. Dread mounts. And out there, somewhere, an unspeakable monster. It's a scenario around which a startling amount of contemporary storytelling revolves. But why? To answer that question, according to our guest this time, Elisa Bulfin, take a look at the novels, poetry, painting and journalism of the Victorians. Bulfin is a specialist in Gothic literature, is one of the organisers of The Threatened Child in 19th Century Popular Fiction and Culture, a conference at UCD later this week. One of the ideas that runs through her work is the concept of culture glasses, the notion that things such as the novels we read control what we see in our world without us even knowing we're wearing them. As such, the powerful apparatus of the Victorians continue to shape how we understand all sorts of things, but in particular for our conversation this week, the idea of childhood and the dangers that surround it. And while this episode is about children, it's not necessarily for children.
My name is Dr. Elisa Bulfin and I teach English Literature in the School of English Drama, Film and Creative Writing in UCD. My particular interests are 19th century literature, representations of children in that period, and particularly children who were under threat. I'm also particularly interested in how this occurred in popular fiction and popular cultural works, because I believe this coloured social ideas about threats to children at the time. A lot of the time, literary scholars just want to look at the literature in and of itself because it's important in itself. So my bigger question is always, well, what effect does the text have in the world? So what does it mean when victims are always represented in a particular way, when perpetrators are always represented in a particular way? There is an anthropological phrase, a German anthropologist phrase. It's brilliant. It's called Kulturbrille, and it means culture glasses. So basically, your culture gives you the lens through which you understand things. And that's why I think it's so important that if we have a lot of popular works, television, novels, films, all perpetuating certain ideas about victims and perpetrators, it's very hard to take those glasses off and see the realities of the thing. But if you think about how somebody like Dickens used their fiction, it was for the purposes of social reform and social justice. And so they created these threatened child characters to try to garner widespread public sympathy for the plight that many children were in.
And yet we're saying that the kind of archetypes they created persist in a kind of way that's malfunctioning.
Yes, I suppose that would be more along the specific sexual abuse track. We maybe have learned to deal with the other forms of abuse more openly, to talk about them more openly in society, and so we've less need maybe to rely on stereotypes. But when it comes to sexual abuse, because it's a really uncomfortable topic, we're still informed by ideas of strangers and lurking predators and monsters, and they originate in that 19th century discourse. That's very true.
Thou little child, yet glorious in the might of heaven-born freedom on thy being's height, why with such earnest pains dost thou provoke the years to bring the inevitable yoke?
And where this all starts is in the idea of a child in the first place, at what it means to be a child.
It's a really interesting question. So for some scholars, the very idea of child itself is considered to be what's called a cultural construction, not something that's fixed or innate, something that people have understood differently in different periods of time. For example, in the Middle Ages, children were perceived, once they got past infancy, once they became self-sufficient, really as mini adults, and not that much different from adults, and they had to go out and work. In a subsistence society, children had to earn their keep. So there wasn't this idea that we have now of childhood as a separate state requiring special protection. That comes later, particularly through John Locke's idea of the infant as a what he called tabula rasa, a blank slate, a kind of an innocent being on whom the world would write itself. So it was really important that the right things were written on that slate. So out of that, you get ideas more of the need to treat childhood as a different and a state to be protected. And this intensifies in the late 18th century with Rousseau and the Romantics, who really caught on to this idea of childhood innocence, childhood as a time of joy to be protected, that the world was a hard place, so why make things hard for the youngest in society? Why not protect them? And you got a school of writing, poems by Wordsworth, odes to children, romantic paintings of the child. Think of a Reynolds painting, a Joshua Reynolds painting, The Age of Innocence. And you get these portraits quite idealized of, you know, beautiful, golden haired, radiant children. And these, over the course of the 19th century, became the dominant way that childhood was conceived of.
And at the same time that as that was happening, you had a kind of a big renting of reality in that the Industrial Revolution was happening, there was increased urbanisation, and children being taken into the famous dark satanic mills. So that was actually the lived experience of many, many children in exactly the period you're talking about.
That is the major contradiction. So I was talking about previous periods as being periods of subsistence where children would have worked would have been on the land. As you say, the Industrial Revolution comes along, and where do children work but in these awful spaces, in factories, in days, 12, 14-hour days, down mines where children were particularly valuable because they could get into smaller spaces than adults. And this was documented in image form as well as in text form, and images can be so powerful in transmitting messages. So children crawling along dark tunnels, basically in the same way that beasts of burden would have, pulling carts laden with the mining materials. So you have this big disjuncture between the reality and the ideal. And a lot of scholars would see this disjunction as being the place that the concept of abuse emerged out of. So on the one hand, childhood is innocent and ideal. On the other hand, so many numbers of children are not living in these ideal conditions, in anything but these ideal conditions.
Alisa Bulfin there, and we'll have more from that conversation on threats to children smuggled into Dracula in other novels of the period next time on Culture File.